count at how many we have in Bethesda, Chevy Chase, and Silver Spring, Maryland. Okay. It's a bunch.
Okay, we'll go with a bunch.
Hi, Mark. We have 9 in Waupaca, Wisconsin.
Gotcha. And I see St. Croix. Thank you.
Where
and Ricky, you want to meet everybody?
What?
We're at ground zero with about 30.
Okay, thanks. Ricky, I've unmuted my line myself, so I think you should be able to hear me. Is that right? Can you confirm that, Ricky?
Yep, you're ready to go.
Okay, good. Well, welcome, everybody. Welcome to the March Citizens Climate Lobby 2019 call. Before we get into the heart of the call, I want to welcome some of the new chapters that started since last month's call. I'm going to start with international, and that includes in Australia, Bean, Fowler, and Robertson. In Canada, that includes Kingston, Leeds-Grenville, Okanagan, and Scarborough. In Germany, that includes Hamburg. And in Nigeria, that includes Lagos. So thank you, Joe and Kathy, for all the work that we're doing building CCL International. In the U.S., the chapters they're aware of that started since last month's call, South Valley, California, Nevada County, Georgia, Kennesaw, Iowa, Cedar Rapids, Idaho, Canyon Country, Kentucky, Lexington, Maine, Dover, Maine, Western Maine, Missouri, Rolla, Montana, Flathead Valley, and also Montana, Missoula, North Carolina, Beaufort, New Hampshire, Antioch, New Hampshire, Lakes Region, New Jersey, Cherry Hill, Oregon, Newport, and Texas, Lubbock. So holy cow, that doesn't just happen. So for the state coordinators and regional coordinators that worked on that, thank you. For the people who trained yourself to do the climate advocate training, thank you. For the group development coaches, the host committees, anybody who was ever a part of one of those tours, thank you so much for that. And obviously Ellie Sparks is the glue that binds all of that together. So Ellie, thank you for putting all that together. And for those of you that didn't hear Jim Probst earlier in the call, this is West Virginia's 5th anniversary. Great work to Jim and everybody in West Virginia, obviously having a developed West Virginia is a really important part of our work. Okay, so our guest today, Ann Kelly, is from Ceres. So I want to give you just a little bit about background on Ceres. Some of the things that Ceres specifically does is advances leading practices that ramp up global investment in clean energy and sustainable food and water, set the highest bar for sustainability leadership for Fortune 500 firms and other influential companies, deliver cutting-edge research and innovative tools to educate and inspire leaders across every sector of the economy to take action, and mobilize investors and company leaders to advocate for stronger climate, clean energy, and water policies in the state and federal level. And then the Ceres Bicep Network comprises influential companies advocating for stronger climate and clean energy policies at the state and federal level in the U.S. As powerful champions of the accelerated transition to a low carbon economy, Ceres Bicep Network members have weighed in when it's mattered most. Companies who've joined the network have a unique opportunity to drive sustainability leadership and action on advancing stronger climate and clean energy policy. And our guest, Ann Kelly, is the Senior Director of Policy for Business for Innovative Climate and Energy, BICEP. She's also, for 25 years, been an environmental lawyer with experience in private and public sectors, and I would say is really one of our most important friends. She's been a keynote speaker on one of our panels for our national conference, and such an important ally. I think there's no chance of us being successful without being successful in the world of business on climate advocacy. So we asked Ann to give us an update about how things are going in the business sector, and also possibly some tips on how we could reach out locally to get support for businesses in our community. So welcome back, Ann. It's so great to have you again.
Mark, thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here. Let me ask right at the outset exactly what your timing is for today's call, because there's so much to say. I'd love to talk to your group for about 6 hours, and I know I don't have that much time.
So what we're hoping is to get about, you know, maybe a opening statement of 12, maybe 15 minutes, and then take questions and answers for maybe another 10 or 12 minutes.
Okay, that sounds great. And it's an honor to be back speaking with all of you. It's been many, many years since I got to greet this incredible group. And I'll admit that when you were introducing yourselves, I was almost choked up because of the incredible enthusiasm around the country. For anybody who's been in this movement a long time, it's really clear that what you all deserve is a tremendous debt of gratitude for the accomplishments of the past year. When history tells this story, there is no doubt that CCL will have been a profound part of the solution, and all will remember your contribution. I was thinking that what we needed was actually, you need to take a video of the first 15 minutes of this call, because that will be in the historical archives of all of you enthusiastically calling in from your locations. It warmed my heart because of, I'm in Lexington, Massachusetts, so go New England and New Hampshire. I grew up in inner city Detroit and was just so honored to hear all of the folks on online from the Midwest. I'm half Canadian, and gosh, kudos to all of you for taking part in this as we struggle with our US political divide. So much appreciate that. Hats off to all the California friends for your unbelievable accomplishments of the past year, thanks to Governor Brown and all of your participation. East, North, South, and West. I could go on and on. As I was hearing each state, I was remembering the accomplishments that I'm well aware of in all of your jurisdictions. As I'll say in a moment, our office works at the federal level primarily, but we are now in 12 states around the country. And one of the elements of good news to report, as I'm sure all of you know, is the progress being made at the state level. And I don't have to tell you about the amazing commitments that were built into the platforms of folks like Governor Whitmer in Michigan, Governor Jared Polis in Colorado. We're thrilled to see what Governor Mills is doing up in Maine. I could go on and on, the recent actions by the New Mexico governor. And let me just say at the outset that one of the strategic moves that we have to make, as I'm sure you know, when a lawmaker does a good thing, they need to get the wet kiss of love from the CCL and from all of us around. And what form does that take? Letters to the editor, thank yous, direct calls, direct visits, ads in the paper that say, thank you, lawmaker, for doing the right thing on climate action. And that's true whether they increase a renewable portfolio standard, whether they make a call to make it easier to procure renewable energy for cities and towns and businesses, whether they call to put their states in a 100% renewable energy place. They need our love. They need our thanks. They need to know we have your backs. So the number one message for me today is really that the more we can tell our lawmakers that we have their backs, Republicans and Democrats, the better off we'll be. But let me get back to the gratitude. I'm raising a glass to you for what happened this past year. And again, anybody who's been in the movement a long time knows the significance of the fact that Republicans stood up in July and filed a bill to price carbon. That was monumental and remains monumental. We know some of them lost their offices, but it doesn't matter. That was a game changer. Similarly, the bipartisan bill, the Deutsch bill, profoundly important. I've been on the website. I'm impressed with the number of endorsers you all have for the bill. Really important move. And it's all because of you all nationwide normalizing the notion of carbon pricing. Tax what you burn, not what you earn. You have put that message out in coffee shops and conference rooms and elevators. I've been trapped in elevators with some of you, making the message clear. Churches, town halls throughout the country. And that's of vital importance, and that will be remembered. And I always say that the most important thing about CCL is the C. It's the citizen. Now, I'm here to talk a little bit about the business community, but I don't want to underestimate the importance of the good, important work you've done with voters, citizens across the country, in rural areas, blue, red, and purple. I know I have a blue background today. That's just because of the room. Please understand, I'm completely committed to a postpartisan process here. What I'm going to do, in addition to giving gratitude, is just talk a little bit about what I think is the political pathway forward, some of the lessons we've learned over the last year, what they portend going forward, and specifically how we might recruit more from the business community going forward. It is time to raise a glass. It is not time to take a bow. You know that. This is actually the all hands on deck movement. And the comfort, I think, comes from, and I'm sure all of you are students of political history. I just finished Jill Lepore's book, These Truths, on the History of the United States. And the comfort that comes from that is that the political entanglements that we see now, however profound and painful, and they are, we have been through most of them before. And we know that President Roosevelt faced profound resistance to the New Deal. So there's no surprise when we hear cries of socialism, which are always a desperate attempt when you know you've won when the other side is calling socialism, or the reflexive resistance to the innovation and the energy and the excitement around the Green New Deal. Hats off to our freshman Democratic friends and to the Sunrise Movement. Let me take that on right away because I've gotten so many questions in the last month. What do businesses think of the Green New Deal and what's important? I'll be brief because we could talk about this at length, but make no mistake, they have energized our movement. There is no question about it. And as a movement, and I've been in it a very, very long time, there's no question that despite our best efforts, we have not generally taken account of the needs of the most vulnerable and communities of color. I remember when the environmental justice movement was born in my world around 1992, and again, having grown up in inner city Detroit, I thought, but of course we need to understand the disproportionate burden held by vulnerable populations. But unintentionally, as a whole, our movement has not taken those people into account. We have not protected vulnerable populations or put their interests front and center for the most part. One of the profound contributions of the Green New Deal is to say no more. We need to look carefully at workers, we need to look carefully at just transition, and we need to put communities that have been most affected by environmental burdens front and center. I don't have to tell you about the metaphor this provides for the global climate crisis and climate injustice, how the most vulnerable countries are affected most by what the rich countries have placed on them. So that's one of the great contributions. The other contribution is that this is a group that can absolutely embrace a price on carbon. We early on met with the policy director of the Sunrise Movement. We also met with Varshani Prakash, the director of the Sunrise Movement, to make it crystal clear that a carbon price was part and should be part of what they are pushing for. Now, we know it's a grand vision. Let's not get attached to the details. The original New Deal was a vision that's different than a measure and a piece of legislation. So again, just pushing back the reflexive rejection or the notion of, gee, maybe the name wasn't the best name. It is energizing. We have agreed with them that a carbon price is necessary but not sufficient. We now have what we wouldn't have had 3-4 years ago, which is an activated left flank, a profoundly representative, energized left flank that puts our proposals closer to the middle. And that's a really helpful thing when it comes to political strategy and getting something done. But it is important that as we think about design principles for an ultimate carbon price, and I know we're not exactly there yet, I'll talk about our principles, that we really put equity front and center, that we really think carefully about protecting vulnerable populations. We know that oftentimes EJ communities are not supportive of cap and trade or carbon pricing schemes because they just simply haven't been included. They haven't been cared for and thought of in a way that would really support their interests. And we can solve that. We can absolutely solve that by making sure that in the next round, and there's any number of mechanisms, you guys are the experts in this, I don't have to walk you through those. Let's make sure we take that very, very seriously. The other lesson learned, of course, is that we can, in fact, pull Republicans onto this issue. You've done it incredibly effectively. We know that it's easier to get younger Republicans. I could name names. I won't right now. But we have a list of Republican targets in the House and the Senate. Very happy to share with you so that we're working collectively on letting those Republicans know that we'll have their backs, which is what citizens have to tell them, what businesses have to tell them. We have to tell them over and over. Remembering those three rules from Yale, our good friend Tony Leiserwitz about climate communications, simple message, repeated often by a credible messenger. That's what you all provide. That's what I try to provide by bringing major employers to lawmakers, but we can't say it enough. I love the t-shirt that somebody was wearing earlier who introduced yourselves. This notion, I mean, one of the most amazing accomplishments of CCL is that you took a relatively wonky topic about taxing negative externalities and you've normalized it. You've made it conversation in many places. We need to do more, however. It's still pretty wonky for too many voters and too many lawmakers and their staffers. I know you know this from your work on Capitol Hill, but there are still too many staffers who would say, what? How does that really work? Is climate change really happening? Can you help me out here? Does that mean the hole in the ozone layer? No offense to them. They've got a million issues to deal with. But what I liked about the t-shirt I saw earlier, and my good friend Zori Zimmerman, who many of you know, who put price carbon on an American flag lapel pin, is that it's normalizing it. we got to figure out the message, and we need it on cereal boxes. We need it on keychains. We need it at bus stops. We need it in designer t-shirts. We need it on blue jeans and bandanas and beach balls and everywhere. I don't know what the phrase is. I'm not the marketing expert. I kind of like text what you burn, not what you earn. But I'm sure that we can come up with that simple message that the Yale, our colleagues at Yale are calling for. Really simple. Maybe it's just price carbon. A carbon fee helps you and me. I don't know. I was brainstorming these as I was cross-country skiing this morning. What could work? Let's not neglect the power of the young people as well. I know that you know about the young woman that had such an impact at the World Economic Forum. I think moving Republicans means getting young people to them. And Mark told me to check out the age of the group here. And I'll admit, okay, lots of us are over the age of, let's say, 40. We absolutely have to keep those young people motivated and engaged. Notice the Sunrise Movement. I interviewed Varshani. Varshani is about 25 years old. Okay, so we need those folks on board. As much as we're reaching out to Republicans, we've got to nurture and cultivate our Democratic friends, and in particular, our younger friends. So one of the key lessons is moving forward is making sure that we are moving Republicans, giving them the cover that they need in all cases. In terms of recruiting the business community, now there's a couple of things we've noticed. And by the way, I did say that the most important thing of CCL is the C. But when I came to your meeting in Washington, I met individuals who worked at AT&T, who worked at Apple, who were part of CCL. And that gave me the sense of, well, wait a second, maybe you all should activate your businesses that you work for as a CCL member. Now, whether that can work or not, I'm not certain. I still think that's my recommendation. But I also agree that reaching out to businesses in various districts, again, using our target list and targeting those Republican offices is helpful. Businesses want numbers. They want safety in numbers. They want to know they're not the only one. You probably already know that. They want to know that taking a position with you all will not hurt their customer base in any way, shape, or form. And I think you can give that kind of comfort directly. There's all kinds of political techniques to do that. I am thinking more about the kind of, the Meg's Muffins and the smaller shops in thinking about this. Larger businesses are making a really deep political calculation about whether to get engaged. And they're looking at their social media feeds, they're looking at their investor feedback. There's a wide array of decisions that they make in deciding whether or not to support. I think persistence is important. One of the reasons CCL has been so profoundly successful is your persistence, your passion, the power of your voice. All those things are really important. I won't bother you with the politics of how difficult it is to work with government affairs offices of major companies. You can kind of leave that to us. It is not easy. I'm not naive to the power, the unfortunate toxic power of trade associations, which aim for the lowest common denominator of the companies that they represent. We could name names, API, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the National Association of Manufacturers, no question about the kind of damage they have done and continue to do on Capitol Hill when it comes to our issue. Now, there are some earnest efforts from within that we are supporting companies who are attempting to stand up to those organizations and get them to change their positions. We are going to continue to do that, and I'm happy to report back on any successes that we have. The other thing I think we've learned, and another lesson for us, is to be really careful about who we align with in the business community, who we trust, and on what basis. We know that there have been some oil and gas companies, for example, that have allegedly come out in favor of carbon pricing. And I think those efforts need to be highly scrutinized, very, very carefully, remembering the lessons from Merchants of Doubt by Naomi Oreskes, a book I know you're all very, very familiar with. One of the things I want to be very specific about is that any claim for relief from civil tort liability, indemnification on the part of oil companies as part of a carbon pricing package, I believe should be wholeheartedly rejected. Those are cases that are much better settled in the courts. That's why we have three branches of government. Very difficult cases to bring in terms of proving standing and causation and direct damages. Let the courts settle those, and let's not give a break to companies that unfortunately, as a cluster, as a group, have really set us back and kept us from solving this problem for a long time. I say that on the 30th anniversary of Ceres. We were born in the wake of the Exxon Valdez spill, and we're approaching the 30th anniversary of that very unfortunate event in March. So let's be very, very careful with the oil companies. That's not to say there aren't nice people working for some of those companies. It's to say, look carefully and with great scrutiny at their efforts as a bloc. So as you build allies, I know, and business allies, I'm quite comfortable with the alliances that we have built. I'm sure you will be careful about who with whom you align and for what. I also want to say that I think, again, one of your great successes is normalizing the basic notion that all economists agree that pricing carbon is the most efficient way to solve this problem. I think we can be, and I completely respect your persistent connection to a very specific design model that would provide a dividend to the American people. I think you are going to win, and you probably have won, a number of citizen allies on all sides of the aisle of the political spectrum, specifically because of the dividend model. But as design principals, we at this moment in our own advocacy, because again, we represent businesses, our own choice is going to be, and I'm about to tell you about a major effort May 21st and 2nd, is going to be to coalesce around design principles. And to at this point, and our strategy, by the way, is probably not unlike yours, is to get Republicans ready for action in 2021 and to really sort of cultivate the political ground on Capitol Hill in preparation for that. In doing so, we're coalescing around a few design principles that I think are obvious for you. Get the price right. Why have most carbon pricing schemes around the globe not been as successful as they could have been? The price has not been high enough. Most cap and trade systems, caps have been too high. REGGIE, our own regional greenhouse gas initiative, an exception to that. The lower the cap goes, the more emissions reductions you get. This is basic math that you know. So as a design principle, we think that's really important. Equally important, of course, is what I said earlier. Take care of those who are most vulnerable. You know what that means. Keeping the U.S. competitive, being willing to have some amount of trade-off between Clean Air Act provisions in return for a carbon price, and a couple of other basic provisions. By keeping those design principles very broad and basic, we feel like we can bring others into the tent, have the largest tent possible. Now, we will never meet your standard. You guys take the cake for carbon pricing crescendo of activity on Capitol Hill. I can never match what you've created. I've been there, I've heard about it from staffers, and I know you've been, you know, probably into the thousands at this point. But we will be creating the greatest, largest coalition of businesses calling for a carbon price on Capitol Hill on May 21st and 2nd. We're calling it LEAD, which stands for Lawmaker Education and Advocacy Day, LEAD. Why are we talking lawmaker education? Because they need to be educated. They need to hear these stories over and over and over. They need to hear from the business community that they actually want to see this problem solved. We recognize the paradigm shift. The business community hasn't always been the one out front on environmental protection. There have been exceptions. We know the reflexive business response to rules and regulations generally. We have to say repeatedly, and we often amaze lawmakers, that businesses are procuring renewable energy at record rates, that the cost of renewables are coming down, and that they need to make, this is the most efficient way to make progress on the issue that businesses care about deeply. We have our work cut out for us, but we're deeply committed to moving the Republican Party on this front, and I shouldn't say the party, select members of the House and Senate, a target list, which I'm happy to share with you. 80% of our meetings will be with Republicans. We will not ignore our Democratic friends, but you and I know where the work has to be done. We have lots of exciting state examples to offer. I alluded to a few. I won't go over those now, but I will say, just so that you have the list, since there's so many of our friends on the line, that we have specific efforts afoot in Ohio, Michigan, Minnesota, California, of course, where we have an office, Colorado, New Hampshire, New Jersey, North Carolina, Nevada, and Pennsylvania. And in those places, we have on-the-ground efforts, allies. We'd be very happy to work with you. I would say that, you know, it's important to remember, as important as carbon pricing is, and again, hats off to you all for being so persistent and dogged about the remedy that's going to lift all boats and solve this problem. I do think it's important to reward and recognize and celebrate action that addresses climate change on any number of fronts. You know that in certain states, we talk a lot more about clean energy than climate change, and that's for political reasons and as a way to generate allies, and I'll look forward to questions on that front. If a state takes action on clean energy, the promotion of clean energy, removing barriers to the procurement of clean energy, that deserves to be celebrated. That's part of our movement. That's part of our collective success. So let's again make sure that we recognize those efforts as well. And along those lines, needless to say, any efforts to electrify transportation also need to be rewarded and praised. I think the final thing I'll say about the target list and some of our Republican allies is that we are going to be winning over some of those with whom we might not agree on everything. I don't have to tell you that. I'm going to use just one example, which is Susan Collins of Maine. She's on our target list. And many, many of us were deeply disappointed in her actions over the past year, in particular, of course, her support for Brett Kavanaugh for the Supreme Court. But we will be putting that aside. If she comes out in favor of a carbon price, if she comes out in favor of climate action, in our thank you note to her, in our published ad to her, we've done this before, we'll be very specific about what we're supporting, and we will get behind that decision. I know some of us will have to swallow hard, given some of the allies that we'll be supporting, but I think that's simply going to be necessary. What I was saying before, just to clarify, that said, when things come down to equity and human rights and human dignity, I think we are going to have to be a little careful and not get so pragmatic that we say, well, we have to solve the climate crisis, nothing else matters. Well, it turns out other things do matter. And what's the other profound lesson of this past year? I know you all watched what happened in Paris with the yellow vests. And I know you remember and took to heart the quote that came from the activists who were looking at Macron, who was clearly trying to solve a global problem. And what did they say? Hey, he's worried about getting us to the end of the world. We're worried about getting to the end of the month. Nothing could say it better. If we diminish the interests of those who truly are trying to get a job and put food on the table and pay their gas bill, we're just not going to succeed. And it makes no sense. And that's not an equitable decision. So with that, Mark, I think my time's probably up. And I'm more interested in your questions than in my own statements, and glad to open it up.
Great, great. Ricky, I have one question. And then if you could just monitor the chat and pick a question from there, Ricky, and we'll just see how far we get. Can you just tell us a little bit more about the event in May, approximately how many businesses you think will be there, what kinds of businesses, and how many offices you might think you'll get to with that event?
Yeah, absolutely, Mark. And the movement is growing, so we're recruiting on a very regular basis. I would say that I certainly expect over 100 businesses. Wow. I expect them to be in all sectors. We're specifically recruiting from all sectors and all parts of the country, by the way. I hear folks from Wisconsin there. We very much want Kohler, which is a really important private company that just had a major wind purchase. We want folks in IT and major manufacturing and consumer goods, apparel, food, big, middle, large, small, and in between. We are going to be, I know you're going to be asking me whether we're taking power companies. Notice that most of the companies we represent are energy purchasers, energy users, consumer brands, but to the extent that we can bring in power companies that get it, and that will be articulate about the necessary transition to a low carbon economy, they are of great importance. NRG, for example. And we're going to be very careful about their talking points. But it is important because they are on the front lines, and lawmakers constantly ask us, well, what does your utility think? So we want to put the spotlight on those utilities that have made it easy to access renewables. We want to invite them in. We want to hear their narrative. I could name several. We know the action that Xcel has taken lately is really important. There's a number of our power companies that have responded to investor pressure that Sirius has organized. Those are the ones we want to highlight. And it's all comers, basically. I think the only caution I would say is that, when the oil and gas companies present a profound challenge because of what I described before. I don't think they have been attracted to our movement. And we know that, to the extent that privately they are warming up Republican lawmakers to move on a price on carbon, that's fantastic. But other than that, unless there is a company that we would think would be using us in some way to greenwash or cover up a particular action, and none of those have come forward, we've got a great group of companies on board, and we hope to do well over 100 meetings. We will spend the first day in briefings and in training You all are the experts at training. We also help our companies know how to talk to members throughout the political spectrum. We have a law firm that helps us to do this. Briefings, we'll have a celebration at night. We have members coming. We also have a CEO dialogue with members that'll be a closed meeting. So you know as well as I do how important it is to hear from the C-suite. That'll be followed by press availability. We have a media kit, and we will have media before, during, and after the event, a surround sound media calling for action. And in some cases, there will be individual companies who will go deeper. Seventh Generation, our wonderful colleagues who have already endorsed the Green New Deal. So we'll have a potpourri of companies when it comes to their individual positioning. Some would rather talk about their own wind purchases. Some would rather talk about the economics of energy efficiency. All welcome. It's all about the same cause. And when the time gets closer, I'm happy to share our finalized design principles, our talking points, our media kit.
Great. Ricky, we're going to have time for one question. So good luck picking which one you're going to pick from the chat. Let me just say one thing, Anne. One thing that I feel really fortunate about is our chapter in the Woodlands is made up all of former extraction industry employees, a lot of people from Exxon. And they've done some fantastic work with the industry there. And they've actually given us a lot of access to just citizens who want to work on it. So, Ricky, which question are you picking from the chat, Ricky?
So I'm going to take the most popular question, and so I won't get yelled at. But the question that is coming across most often is, what advice do you have, Anne, for our chapters and our local people as they reach out to their local chambers of commerce? And, what successes or what experience can you best help us with there?
Oh, great question. So first off, I want as a marketing measure to quickly get a video made of the first 15 minutes of this call. So that was important. That was huge. And that was, I just can't say enough about what that felt like on the receiving end. You guys have built a movement and chambers need to know that. I think you want to go to them and you want to offer to make I'm sure by now you have a very tight PowerPoint deck and a tight presentation. And I'm sure you've got trained presenters. I'm sure many of you have had the Al Gore training as I had. I'm sure you have a message that balances the good news with, I know you know about the stories of despair, the good news, the bad news, your happiness budget, your humor budget, all the things Al Gore taught us. I'm sure you would go forward with really specific local examples of a particular chamber. So if you're talking to the chamber in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, you really need to localize that message. You need to be very clear about the way in which a price on carbon would affect specifically the businesses in Pittsburgh to the extent that you can do that. Now, I'm working with one of the big four to try to get an app that would allow you to plug in certain variables so that you could actually say, well, how is a price on carbon going to affect me? I run an apparel company. I'm a restaurant. I think there needs to be an app for that so that you have a product and you can say, here it is. Now you may have all developed something similar already, and I know how well you know your own analytics. But I think being very specific, the more local and specific you can get, we've learned over the years, that's actually much more effective than the big, broad IPCC report, though that was a profound warning. Believe me, don't get me wrong. What I've learned is local specific examples. And I, Pittsburgh, of course, is a great example because of the Paris-Pittsburgh comment when Trump left the Paris Agreement. Local employees and how much they care. Any surveys you have from local schools, young people, related movements throughout the state of Pennsylvania. And then, of course, first and foremost, the economics. Showing, and we've got plenty of data, happy to share with you. There's data from the national labs and elsewhere about the profound cost of inaction versus taking action now. But I'm happy to jump on the phone, by the way. I'd also recommend Chambers for Innovation Clean Energy, run by Diane Doucette. You probably know about them. Diane is a real expert in working with local chambers.
Great. And this has been absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much. My only regret is we didn't get you back here sooner. So look forward to seeing you soon. Thank you for what you're doing. Can't wait to see what happens in May. And please feel to stick around for the next 12 minutes or so if you want to hear what's going to happen on the rest of the call. But it's a Saturday and there is cross-country skiing available. So we understand if that's what you end up doing also. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. The thanks is all mine again. I can't thank all of you for what you're doing, for your commitment to the movement. If I say much more, I think I will get choked up, but it's really important to keep at it. And I'm just so grateful for all of your commitment. And I'll be looking forward to coming back again.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Okay, I have a couple of other people that I want to bring onto the call. I want to introduce our development director, Lene Pettengill. She's going to talk about a program that I'm really excited about because I don't know, you know, we have our Climate Guardians created $1 million matching pool for our Year in the Pill last year, and they've created a matching pool for monthly donors now. I don't know if anybody's ever done this, so I'm looking forward to hearing about it. So, Lene, morning and welcome.
Hey, everyone. I am super excited about our March monthly donor drive. We have a lot of energy building in DC right now with the Energy Innovation Act. And to sustain this new momentum, we're now providing a dollar-for-dollar gift match to all monthly Evergreen donations. Evergreen donors, those who donate on a monthly basis to our work, make it easier for us to fully focus on our climate solutions. And we hope it will make it easier for you to give as well. Plus, the impact of your donation will be doubled. So if you've been giving to our Year in the Pill in the past, I hope this year you'll consider moving your giving to a monthly gift. We've had a lot of fun and great success with our Year in the Pill, but it did mean a huge portion of our revenue was coming in very last month of our fiscal year, which made for a few very lean months along the way. I know I'm going to switch my giving from a one-time gift in December to a monthly donation starting this month. And by giving monthly, I'm even able to bump up my giving a little, which feels great. This new match opportunity, like Mark said, was made possible by a group of our Climate Guardian donors who each provided a gift of $10,000 or more. Thank you, Climate Guardian donors. You're inspiring us once again. Our goal is to get to a total of $75,000 per month in recurring monthly donations. We're committed to matching all monthly donations for at least the next 12 months. And that's including monthly donations from past campaigns. So if you're already a monthly donor, starting this month, your donation will be matched, whether you're giving to CCL or CCE. And then right now, we're recruiting new monthly donors to CCE, Citizens Climate Education, which is even more good news as it could be tax deductible for you when you give on this side. We do believe we're the first nonprofit organization to launch this kind of campaign where monthly donations are matched each month throughout the year. So kind of exciting to lead the way here. You'll find more details in your action sheet, including a link to donate. Thank you so much for any help you can lend to this important campaign. Back to you, Mark.
Okay, Lene, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to doing exactly what you're doing also, and I'm excited about being able to be a monthly donor. Cool, thank you. All right, I also wanted to bring on our Vice President of Government Affairs, Danny Richter, so he could give us an update on a few things of what's happening in Washington, D.C. So, Danny, first of all, could you just tell us, you know, we haven't heard anything about the Climate Solutions Caucus this year, and it was such a big deal of what we were doing the last couple of years. What do we know about that at this point? You're still muted. You have to unmute yourself, Ricky. I mean, Danny. Oh, okay. Can you unmute him, Ricky?
Okay, you should be able to hear me now. Can you hear me? Great. So, the status of the Climate Solutions Caucus, you know, this year, Congressman Deutsch made getting the energy, innovation, and carbon dividend out a priority over the caucus, and we're happy about that. We agreed that that was the right thing to start with, but yesterday there was the first meeting of groups like Citizens Climate Lobby that are being consulted about reconstituting the caucus. So there's nothing to report other than discussions have begun at this time.
Okay, well, that's good to hear because we're all kind of in the dark about that. So I'm really excited about a lot of the new Democrats on the bill. I feel like the left flank is being protected, which is really important right now. And I think a lot of us would like to see more Republicans. Do you anticipate additional Republicans very soon?
I do anticipate additional Republicans. I feel very confident about that. The timing, I am not certain about. But of course, the thing that will make sure that we have more Republicans that I currently think are ready to join and that will push up the timeline is if all of you keep on doing the wonderful work you have continued to do. If we take Ann Kelly's advice and keep on pushing, keep on advocating, keep on being that constituent voice. So I do anticipate more Republicans to join on. I don't have a sense of timing.
Okay, thank you for that. And then I noticed that for our in-district lobbying, we have different asks for the House and Senate, which seems a little bit out of normal. So in the House, we're asking people to co-sponsor the bill. In the Senate, we're asking people to make climate a bridge rather than a wedge issue. Why different asks in the different bodies?
Yeah, the most basic answer to this question is that the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act has been resubmitted in the House and has not in the Senate. It would be a source of frustration to ask Senate offices to co-sponsor something that they can't, and it could make us look uninformed. And of course, we don't want to do that. But there is also an additional reason. In Congress, most bills that eventually become law have to be resubmitted through multiple Congresses. And it is generally the same member of Congress who is the lead sponsor on those bills. There are reasons for this, good reasons for this. Generally, that lead sponsor is the one who wrote the bill and who knows the most about the finely balanced considerations that are reflected in the bill text. They know the history of engagement with stakeholders. They know who supports it, who doesn't, and why. Keeping this knowledge is important and necessary for it to eventually passing, and understandably results in a sense of ownership about that bill. Naturally, a convention has evolved around this, and that convention is that it is exceedingly rude for another member of Congress to introduce a bill that another member of Congress was the lead on in a previous Congress. It is both an emotional slap in the face and a good way to decrease the likelihood that it passes. So how is this convention relevant to us? Well, Senator Coons, Democrat out of Delaware, was the lead on the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act in the Senate. So this is now his bill. For any other senator to introduce it without Chris Coons being the lead would be a slap in the face and decrease the chances that it is ultimately passed. This means that when it is reintroduced, Chris Coons will be the lead. This doesn't mean that other senators can't be involved. Not at all. Other senators absolutely can be a huge help to Senator Coons as he continues to try and find Republican co-sponsors and tries to make sure this bill becomes law. But they need to talk to him first about the way he can do that. And this is where we get back to the Senate ask. We can help Senator do this with our Senate ask to make climate a bridge issue, not a wedge issue. Continuing to focus the minds of senators on the seriousness of this problem and sending a clear signal from their constituents that this issue is way too important for partisan politics will help him to do that. It will put both Democrats and Republicans in a collaborative frame of mind and will help create a politics in which Senator Coons can reach out to Republicans and where other Democratic senators are also looking to encourage Republicans to work on climate. Now, of course, the first bullet in that one-page ask sheet is to co-sponsor once the bill is reintroduced, and I believe this also helps Senator Coons. But until that seed of a bipartisan bill is planted, the best that we can do is tend to the soil by saying that we, as constituents, expect the parties to work together on this issue. So that's the reason for the difference between the two asks.
Great. Danny, thank you very, very much. I appreciate you making yourself available on a Saturday.
Happy to help.
Okay, thanks a lot. Okay, so I just want to give you a quick idea of some of the things that happened since last month's call. So, you know, we've started the in-district lobbying, most of which will happen in March and April, but we've already had 70 meetings. And at the House meetings, almost half of them have been face-to-face with the members. That's just a fantastic kickoff to the in-district lobbying that will happen from now through April. There were 281 pieces published between op-eds and letters to the editor. We are definitely coming out of the gates faster at the start of this year than we did with last year. So congratulations to everybody who's continuing to submit pieces and get them published. And the city of South Florida actually endorsed HR 763. So it's nice that we're seeing actual municipalities shift their endorsement from the concept to the actual bill. And so the everybody who's working on the endorsements, that is just really, really exciting. I want to share with you what we're doing in Canada and the U.S., and then Ricky's going to share a chart with you so you can see the progress of the international conference. In Canada, we are asking people to use Press Reader to maximize our letters to the editor and start preparing for federal town halls. In the U.S., I'll come back to the first thing, which is what Lene mentioned in a minute, but continue. There's really great suggestions about how to continue to explode awareness for the bill throughout the action sheet. New community is up and functioning, and we want to make sure that you're showing everybody in your chapter how to use new community. And then also there's really good communication skill exercise for reaching out to people. You know, there's probably some people who participated in with your chapter over time, but then because a bill, you know, it took us a while to get a bill introduced. You know, I've been working on this for 10 years. Dan's been working on it for more than 10 years. You know, that was kind of knocking our head at the wall for a long time. So I bet there's some people that you can reach out to, and there's really good communication exercises. But really the big thing this month is I'm going to be doing the same thing Lene is. I will still make a smaller donation on Giving Tuesday because I love doing that. But I love the idea of being able to be a monthly donor. And for all of you who that works, fantastic. Okay, Ricky, could you please share the chart of what the first 4 weeks of conference registration looks like? So the black line, if you can't see it, shows that in the first 4 weeks of registrations for this June's conference, there's more registrations than there were in the first 2 months for any other conference. So we opened the conference a month later, but we're already ahead of where we were with all the other conferences. There's over 600 people registered already. So, you know, we've told you there's 1,200 lobbying spots. And I just want to make sure to remind those of you who are coming, who haven't registered yet, the rate of registration is absolutely crazy this year. So if you're planning on coming, please do that. Okay, Ricky, you want to go back to everybody's font so we can let everybody wave and sign off. And thank you again. I agree with Anne that we do need to get recordings out of the first 15 minutes of this call. But also, if you don't stay on and see this last 5 or 10 minutes, to me, this is one of my favorite parts of the calls also. So thanks, everybody.
So they're not doing anything.
They're not doing anything.
I'm going to try to get the car for 1 day.
And that's the way
it's sort of like keep your eye on the ball.
We don't want to say, oh, thank you very much.
But the other side that should have an educational component.
Someone thought that they were $100 short. We certainly would put out an appeal here. We might actually work.
So they have that essentially.
Hi, everybody. Bye.